A mind is like a river, maybe deep or shallow, and the view is like a valley, maybe wide or narrow. In this life that brings me here, it's my quest to live it without fear, and to find the answers to some questions and carry on. I guess it's just my nature.
The great Les McCann, jazz pioneer and political activist, composer and band leader, with Let Your Learning Be Your Eyes. This is from his 1975 album, Hustle to Survive. And you know, I like the sound of that title too, because that's what we talk about, surviving. Speaking of which, it seems as if my favorite, I don't want to pin this on you, my favorite congressional leader, Ilhan Omar, is doing everything possible to interrupt her survival. She's at it again. She has attacked, and that's the only word you can say for it, she has attacked Stephen Miller, Trump advisor and a White House advisor, calling him a white nationalist. This now coming on the heels of a death threat she has received from presumably a pro-Trump person who has been identified and arrested. But she seems not to be worried about her role in precipitating these events, and they are not stopping. They will not stop. So now she has gone on this rant because Stephen Miller has been given a new set of charges by Donald Trump to help fix immigration, as if he has the prowess and the know-how to do that. And this in turn prompted Omar to retort that Miller is a white nationalist, and what an obscenity it is that Trump should have installed him in this position. Okay. Here's what I'm saying again. I've said it before. I was very thrilled when Omar and others came into the White House as a new crop of legislators. And that was a good time, a good development. And within the blink of an eye, I found myself wondering, what did the people do here by electing people who are behaving this way? Not just Omar, but we had Representative Tlaib from Michigan. And in her victory speech, she says unabashedly, we here and let's get this mother out of office, essentially. That's what she said. Who talks like that as an elected member of Congress? This is your maiden speech, right? This is your victory speech. And this is the language you're using. It seems as if somebody got to her and advised her that her deportment was deplorable, just inexcusable and deplorable. You do not behave this way in any circumstance, but particularly given the environment in which the speech is made. You've just been elected, and you are among the two women coming into office who are Muslim. So that was, it was a great joy when you were elected. And within 2 seconds flat, you spat all over it. You desecrated the dignity of it with your speech. She apparently has chilled out. We haven't heard any obscene pronouncements from Tlaib. But we're seeing from Omar a persistent ignoring of what she is doing. Not just for herself. By herself, she could do whatever she wants to do. But she is a member of the Congressional Black Caucus. So in a sense, what she does and what she says reflects on the body as a whole. And nothing that she has said or done so far has advanced the cause of collective progress. She has only sown the seeds of discord and dissension and fracturing whatever they had going for them as an organization in terms of a collective identity. The collective identity of the caucus is not that they're racists. The collective identity of the caucus is that they come together representing all these various districts around the country, and they're trying their very best to work in unison toward shared objectives. When one person leaves the group and goes out on her or his own and creates this kind of chaos, it reflects poorly and it hurts the group. Now, personally, she may actually feel this way. She may feel very passionately about Steve Miller being a white nationalist. Okay. As a legislator now belonging to a group, whether you have, you know, some kind of an ID or not, but you are part of a collective that existed decades before you got there, that had been in struggle decades before you got there. You think you're the only person among all these Black and Latino legislators who are acutely aware of race oppression in this country? You think you have to educate them and the public about race oppression in the United States of America? And that you have no reason to work in collaboration with anybody or work in a consciousness, with a consciousness that you are representing a group to which you belong, unless, of course, you stage another conference and renounce membership in the Congressional Black Caucus. When you do things like that, it says to me, and I've remarked about this before, I've said this woman Her mouth is in overdrive and her brain is in neutral. I've said that many times before. Why don't you think of what you're doing and the impact it would have on a whole group of people who are doing their best? I don't agree with all of what they're doing, and I have serious criticisms of many of the members of the Congressional Black Caucus. But I am not so dumb as to believe that if you find fault with one or two, you have to, by necessity and by extension, you're finding fault with the whole group. You have to be crazy to be thinking that way. But this woman now, with her latest barrage of nonsensical things that she's doing and saying, I draw the line. I'm done with her. I'm done with her. She either has an obsession about being a martyr, or she has an unbreakable desire to distinguish herself as the most important person, the most important black person, black legislator in Congress, both of which I do not agree with. She has not yet advanced or contributed to the aggregate struggle, anybody's aggregate struggle. She has only distinguished herself and flying, with the support, the implicit support, the implied support of the Congressional Black Caucus. She has, in effect, used that relationship, which may or may not even exist, to place herself at the center of the news cycle. So everybody's reporting about her and everybody's talking about her, and she relishes the idea that she has come from nowhere, politically speaking, and now everybody is obsessed with her, even if it has to do with the fact that she's drawn attention to herself and by extension to the black aggregate, the collective, for the wrong reason. And that tells me she's a dangerous person. She's a dangerous person. She's a reckless person. And she has no respect at all for what people who came before her struggled to put in place and are still struggling to achieve as a group. She doesn't understand that. Therefore, she is antithetical to struggle. She is useless in that sense. It's like you're making a pie crust or something that requires care, exact measurements. You have to know what you're doing. And then somebody just comes and messes it all up, leaving you with all of this stuff on the table to now go back and fix, interrupting what you thought was your flow. You thought you had everything in place. All you have to do is to concentrate on getting your pie crust just right. Somebody comes and messes it up. For no reason other than in doing whatever it is they're doing. They attract attention to themselves. And they're so out of touch with reality that even a warning about some guy promising and vowing to put a bullet in your skull, that's the direct quote. Even with that, it doesn't cause you to say, okay, let me be more careful. Let me be very careful. It does not appear that she has a good working relationship with the caucus as a whole, the caucus members. It does not appear that she has a political base that could be mobilized at a moment's notice to protect her in any way. It does not appear that making friends is high on her agenda. It does not appear that she understands that politics at her level requires a great deal of diplomacy and a sophisticated reading of the landscape, full of mines, full of bombs, full of all kinds of things that can threaten your political aspirations. But this is what you're doing. And I'm sure I'm not the only person who has talked about it. I'm sure members of the Congress have expressed their alarm and their concern, but she continues to do it. And let's look at the issues that she is provoking. It's all essentially name-calling. Name-calling. It's just any day now, we would find her arguments at the level of your mama wears army boots. That's going to be the level at which she's going to be engaging. Nothing has been advanced. No clear path forward has been explained by her. What she sees, or no ideas for how you gain momentum and move forward, move the people forward. None of that is part of her agenda. Is that she makes one statement, she gets smacked in the face. The woman herself had to backtrack from her first grievous offense. And she apologized, and I use her word, unequivocally. She apologized unequivocally. What does that mean? It means that you're writing checks you can't cash. It means you're not thinking. It means you're reckless. If you're going to say something because you're so passionate about it, then why would you feel a need to apologize unequivocally after you have done the damage? It means you're not a thinking person. It means you're a dangerous person. And you cannot be entrusted with the simple thing of the integrity of your actions. If you truly believed, if you were a true believer, your position would be you have nothing to apologize for. But even you couldn't support your position when your so-called enemies came after you and smacked you silly. And you realized that you had no recourse because you understood the implications. you issued this perfunctory apology, but you made sure you said you apologize unequivocally. That's a huge concession. Most people, if they make a mistake, they just apologize. But when they intentionally set out to make the mistake, the intention is to not apologize at all. But there she had to go. I apologize unequivocally, as if that means anything. After you've done the damage, even to yourself, it doesn't even help you to apologize. So we see this repeat offense occurring with Congresswoman Omar. And at some point, and it's going to be very soon, a decision will be made as to whether she is a good addition to a group effort, whether we can entrust her to just keep her mouth shut and concentrate on the work she was elected to do, which is to represent the hopes, dreams, and aspirations and the will of the people of her district in Minnesota. That's what she was elected to do. That's what she should do. While she learns how to read this landscape and how to navigate it. I hate it when people assume that somehow they are entitled to the protection and support of a community that they show absolutely no allegiance to and no concern about in their individual actions. It's like this Smollett guy out in Chicago. You did something stupid. You're the one who lied. You're the one who orchestrated a false mugging. You're the one who made false reports. And now, because you're black, everybody's supposed to be mobilizing behind you. You don't nearly qualify. Get the hell out of here. And it couldn't have happened at a worse time in Congress. We have major fights to fight. We have lots of ground to cover. We have lots of serious issues to deal with. Name calling is not one of them, nor is it in and of itself a solution. You think that by calling Stephen Miller a white nationalist, somehow you have elevated my understanding of what white nationalism is? You are so wrong. And you're thinking at a level way beneath where you ought to be. Name calling is not part of your portfolio. We could do that. I could do all kinds of name calling all by myself. I don't need Congresswoman Omar to do that, to educate me about who is a white nationalist and who is not. I just need you to get with the program about collective action and get something done and represent your district. By the way, don't be disillusioned that you are the only Muslim in Congress. You'd be wrong to think that. You'd be wrong to think that. And they, for more than 20 years, some of them, have been taking care of the people's business, irrespective of their religious identification. So I'm done. I'm done with this Congresswoman. I think she has a whole different agenda. She has a whole different agenda, and she is following the dictates of that agenda, which is clearly highly personal and which does not have the aggregate interests of the people in mind. I can't support that. I don't support that. And if she doesn't have access to people who would take her aside and let her have it, the implicit condition being, you either take our advice or we have to leave you alone. We have to separate ourselves from you because you are a danger. You are a direct threat to our aggregate concerns. And you're moving in a way that systematically is undermining and distracting from what it is we are supposed to be concentrating on. You're not promoting collective responsibility here and collective movement. You're not operating in the African spirit at all. So much for Ilhan, sorry, Omar of Minnesota. I wish somebody could sit her down and definitively let her know what her actions already have cost the collective and why, in order to advance as a collective, they cannot tolerate any of her actions. They may be forced, in fact, to publicly state that they're moving in a whole different direction, of which she is no longer going to be a part. We got to get tough here. We have to get tough. All right. It's exactly 1:30, so we'll take a break, come back, and talk some more right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. Actually, I'm trying to retrieve some of the subjects that I wanted to tackle since yesterday and just didn't have the space to do so. But we can't ignore these subjects that I'm following up on. And we'll do that perhaps for one more day. We would kind of get current. But 888-874-4888 is the number to call. We're talking about Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota and her latest gaffe. And we cannot go further, any further, without understanding that we have to put a pin on this one. We gotta check this one. 888-874-4888. Jay, you start us off from New York.
Well, you know, Utrice, I usually don't disagree with you, but I totally disagree with you. 157%. Because she is doing her job as a congressperson in the United States Congress to call out a blatant racist. No one else in that Congress, from what I have observed, has called out Stephen Miller for the type of individual and the things that he is doing to this country and his behavior. Now, people may not like it, but it's something that has to be done, and she's the one that's doing it. Maybe she really doesn't care about longevity in the Congress. Maybe she feels as though she's just there to expose the racists that are in the White House. So if she decides that she wants to make that choice to call a spade, then I support her 1,000%. And I feel that whatever happens to her, she knows that she's placing herself in a certain degree of jeopardy, but she's going to stand up on her square and deal with it on the level that she deems fit. And hey, I have no problem with it. I respect her even more for having the audacity to stand up and challenge that racist. Because if we had more people who would challenge a racist like Stephen Miller and really see things as they was and call out the Donald Trump for the racist that he is, then maybe the country will move forward. But if we don't, and we allow Stephen Miller and Donald Trump and his men to go along and do the things that they're doing, then we're going to be in even more trouble.
Well, I hope you understand that you're making a purely emotional argument. That's what you're doing. That's what she is doing. And at this stage of the game, we ought to be way beyond the obvious. We ought to be sophisticated enough to understand how politics works and what is the end game. Is the end game to call a guy a racist? Or is the end game to defeat the racist? You call a guy a racist, we've been through the cycle so many times. You know, your mama wears army boots. That's what I'm saying. That's where we are right
now. How did the president get in the office? Think about this.
We are retrogressing. We should be at this point in 2019, considering all the permutations we have been through politically. We should be far more sophisticated
The thing that you want to do is, that's wrong, is you want to behave in a civil fashion to an uncivilized human being. Everything that you're talking about is what he used to get into office. So
yes, but
you have
I'm
to
not,
at
I'm
some
not
time
arguing.
Behave
I'm
in the same fashion.
We are stuck when we respond at that level.
No, we're not.
Number one, we're not.
Because people are not responding in that level and doing the work. No, we're not. There's certain individuals that have to take a stance and have to behave counter to what the norm is in order for those that are behaving in the norm to continue the process. That's how the clown got into office, because he behaved not like the norm.
You're arguing about something already accomplished. And what has already been accomplished is that a very average, and I'm being kind, a very average candidate has become the president of the United States.
We agree.
Oh, okay. So that is done.
Yeah,
the question I'm raising is how...
Above average is not going to be him.
I'm not concerned about Donald
getting,
Trump.
You treat. See, this is the point.
Wait a minute.
You
Let's not
win.
Talk over each other. I'm saying okay. I'm no longer concerned about somebody who already has been elected, who already has been in office, who already is preparing for a second term. I'm not concerned about that. That's been made clear. I'm concerned that to the extent that we are able to confront this regime, how are we intending to do that when we have people going every which way and literally diluting our strength? And still expecting us to believe that they're part of a struggle. You're not. A clinical, objective analysis shows that nothing so far has indicated that Congresswoman Omar is taking into consideration the impact and possible impact of her actions. She has not demonstrated that.
I disagree. And the reason why I disagree is because she's doing the work. See, beyond making statements that she's making, she's doing work.
What is the work?
It's just like the work is
the
community.
What is the work that she is doing commiserate with her statements?
Trying to do the necessary things for her community.
No. Let's be explicit now and specific.
I don't live in Minnesota, but she got to be doing something.
You don't have to live in Minnesota?
No, but Eutrice, the point of the matter is, isn't she on committees? Isn't she questioning people? That's part of her job. Isn't she trying to get things for her community? Isn't she trying to move forward ideas?
Here's the fundamental thing that you have missed and continue to miss. Whatever she's doing independently, as a newbie in Congress, she is not on her own, nor should she consider herself an independent entity. If she is indeed revolutionary, she would understand that she's part of a collective. And at
I think what you want is her just to come into office, keep her mouth shut, I guess learn the craft, and then at a later date, make some sort of statement. She doesn't feel that way. She feels as though probably
she doesn't feel that way. And I'm saying that, first of all, I don't oversimplify what I'm saying. What I'm saying is really very sophisticated analysis. It is not a simplistic approach at all. If I, Eutrice Fleet, if I were elected, as smart as I am, as capable as I am, as experienced as I am in all these different areas.
I agree with all of that, too.
I will not, as a newly elected member, go without deep consultation with people who have been there before me.
I would surmise this. This is how I would surmise it. If you was in her position, you would follow all of the things that you said, and after you're reelected, you would act just like her and probably 10 times worse. Because
than I know. However, I would respect.
I remember your writing, your investigation experience. You would do a number on a whole lot of people. Some people don't have that type of talent that you have,
Some
people don't have the coof.
Let me say this, please, Eutrice.
Let me say this about you, Eutrice. You are one of the most strategic, thoughtful, intellectual thinkers that we have in our community. A lot of people don't understand the wiseness and the strategic thought process that you have. I've witnessed you for years from the City Sun. I saw what you did with the city song. I saw what you tried to do at WBAI. You a smooth operator, you trees. You cool. You're not going to show your hand like Sister Omar is showing. But I tell you this, if you was ever in a position, you would be greater than Adam Clayton Powell. I tell you that in Congress you would be. You would put it on a whole bunch of people. But hey, sometimes you trees, people don't have the ability that you have nor the character that you have. The greatness is that there's some people that
I never have thought about anything I've done strictly from a personal point of view.
But we
know. I have always borne in my mind that whatever I do, it reflects on the community.
But that's your greatness, sis. That's your greatness.
People don't know about your history. This is what you also do. And when you see somebody, you give them a little bit of advice, right? You tell them, listen, I have no doubt she's a smart woman. She has many degrees. She's a very smart person. But she's going the wrong way. And she is apparently immune to the idea of sitting down and taking counsel.
You just hit the word. The thing is, you treats. I've seen you give counsel to people. I've heard you give wisdom and knowledge to people. Everybody doesn't take it. People don't really realize some of the people that you have sat at the table with and talked to. I've seen it over these last almost 30 years. I've seen you talk to young people. I've seen you talk to politicians. I've seen you talk to these people. People don't even have a clear understanding of the history that you have. And that's the tragedy sometimes when I listen to you. I've seen you in the room with Dr. Clark and Dr. Ben and others. I've seen you. And I understand your greatness. But people need people like you to give them counsel. But you know what the sad thing is, Utrecht? They don't want to listen. Do you know what she would be like? Do you know what she would be like, honestly, Utrecht, if she sat down with you for 2 hours? If she took the time for 2 hours and sat down with you, you would put her on such a serious direction with the passion that she already has. You wouldn't say anything else about her because she wouldn't behave like she's behaving now. But I understand why she's behaving like this. So, hey,
I don't.
I wish she would sit down with
you. This is my grief. I do not understand why she's doing this, especially since, you know, these are repeat performances. And now it has gone beyond the point of theoretical discussion. We have had somebody threaten her life. Threatened to put, as he said, a bullet in her skull. Now, if this is not a wake-up call, I don't know what would be.
Her intelligence
is needed, but she is going the wrong way at it.
Well, all I can say is, Utrecht, I would hope in my lifetime that somebody would really sit down and listen to the likes of Utrecht Lee. I wish you could get a hold of maybe 3 politicians in New York City and really, really school them and shake stuff up on a level that never before. No, stop laughing, Utrecht. Stop laughing. Seriously, because this is real. If you had 3
politicians... I'm saying it because I have done it, attempted it so many times.
I know you have.
In the end, here's the thing.
They don't listen.
Not that they don't listen. They are not intending to listen. Because they have been groomed by a system that teaches them entirely different values. You could talk about community all you want. What makes you think that most politicians are concerned about community? They're concerned about, well, in 2 years, I'll launch my next campaign for the Senate.
There you go. longevity and making money. They're not concerned. They're not concerned about the community. There's a rarity where you make it one, but in reality, once they get into office, they start doing what? Campaigning to get back into office. So in the process, they got so many people coming at them looking for something that they never get a grip of what their real work is to be done. And then that's why you'll have somebody in Congress for 40 years like a Charlie Rangel, and after he's out of office, nobody from within his circle has taken over for him, and the community is basically destroyed. But everybody loves Charlie. But if you really put Charlie into context, after a certain period of time, he was a disaster for Harlem. And I've lived in Harlem for 54 years. I know what it is. I live here. I know it's not what it should be.
And you see, you have a handle on it.
We have no
community. You have a handle on it. But I'm saying the time has come, and we have to make that decision. The time has come to disallow this to happen to us, because in the end, it is an affront to our collective survival. We cannot allow people to behave this way and get away with it, because what they're saying, in effect, is my individual thought, my individual action is more important than anything the collective has to say. That's
have
what they're saying.
Have a beautiful day. Have a beautiful day, sister. You treat
well,
you the best.
You gave me a beautiful day, Jay.
Hey, Eutrice, let me tell you something. You done gave me beautiful days for over 30 years. You done put a smile on my face ever since I heard you and I've read your work. You done made my life more happier than I could ever make your life by giving you encouraging words. I know what you've done for my life. People don't even realize what you've done for my life from reading you, listening to you, trying to process the things that you're saying. People don't even have a clue of what kind of treasure you really are to the community. And I wish they really knew.
What elevates me, Jay, what really makes me happy is that when I listen to you,
you make me happy.
I listen to so many other people. I can hear the wheels turning in your head. I can hear the evidence of an investment you're making in becoming clearer and clearer about what you're thinking, and that ultimately influencing what you're doing. That is my joy, and I thank you for the compliment. Thanks so much for calling in. Marty from Connecticut, you're on the air.
Afternoon, Eutrice.
Hello, Marty. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I must say, I must start in the same vein as the previous caller. Much of what you present and the way you present it, I am wholeheartedly in agreement with. However, in this particular instance, I find myself on the other side of the fence. And I'm there for a couple of reasons. My first reason is, and I thought about it, and I'm going to try to express it this way. I happen to be a person of color, and I can trace my family back to a plantation right outside of River Junction, Florida. There's still land in the church there that they donated. When they got their land, they were able to donate for a graveyard and a church. And I've gone through legally segregated schools in Florida, and I've had the beauty of America. I put a kid through an Ivy League college, and I sit back and I say to myself, all these people that we voted for, the black congressional group, their caucus, and the Democratic Party, at the end of the day, I don't see for the masses of our people much progress, relatively speaking, in terms of relative wealth, relative political power. Even when we had Obama, you yourself complained about certain policies and approaches. And for me, I'm in the finance field, him allowing no one to go to jail or insist upon restructuring the banks was one of the biggest crimes. Now we have someone from Minnesota who expresses it a little bit different. And what I want to know is, why is it that poor whites working whites who felt that they have been left behind or damaged or forced to use opioids can elect a Trump who has used the same or worse language than this representative has. Why do they get a pass with electing him? And people who feel that they want someone outside of the box to pull the negotiations one way so that the other side has to pull back, a strategy that the Democrats seemingly have not been able to master except to put us in a box to go nowhere. When she came out and she said it, I stand beside her. You know, my daughter used to work in Minnesota, and you know what? My view is that was the only time I would go to Minnesota. But I tell you what, if Omar called for support, money, or a march, I'd make my way there because I want someone pulling as hard on the other side using the same, not coming to a gunfight with a knife, coming to a gunfight with a gun. That's the way I feel. And if the Democratic Party has to pull it back, I want the Republicans to give something up. And that's what the Democrats have not been able to get. They give up and get nothing
in
their negotiations.
I understand your arguments. I don't think you understand that essentially you're making an emotional argument, not a political
one.
Nope,
I've thought about it over 60 years, and my conclusion is the following. They do not get
so
to put Trump in office
60 years.
And whine about their suffering And here's my logic. I'm trying to give you my logic. My logic is the American voters put a man in office who basically doesn't understand governance from my perspective, who uses vulgar language and has not been called to the carpet on it in an effective way. If there's someone on the other side that may make a misstep here and there.
I hate to shatter your deep-seated feelings, but nothing you've said so far really matters.
As I do, I feel the same way about you and your complaint with her. I don't want her
Listen to what I'm saying. We have to change our definition of politics and how we interact with this thing called politics. The people that you refer to who elected Donald Trump got exactly what they wanted. They mobilized for it. They put their energy behind it, and they got what they wanted. I don't like it. You don't like it. But that is the reality of how they changed their political equation.
We don't have the numbers to change the political. The bottom line is we don't control the economics of our neighborhood. We don't really control much of the politics in our neighborhood. And collaborators.
The argument I am saying that we must stop making is what we don't have. Because that too is an emotional argument.
We have
to start making real arguments and taking real action like we mean it.
And you know what?
That's the job of the majority of the black congressional Congress.
They didn't support Al Green with impeachment. What have they done? You tell me what they have done.
You may recall that I asked a question and I made these exact observations that you're talking about at the time it was happening. Do you recall that I broadcast live his presentation of his articles of impeachment, not once, but on the second round as well. And I noted that not one person stood beside the man as he recited the articles of impeachment against the president. Not the first time, not the second time. And he was the only one standing there.
Which means there's no collective. You keep talking about a collective. Where's the collective?
Exactly.
When it's time
Here's how you think. I'll be running out of time, so I want to get this point in. Good, bad, or indifferent, whether real or theoretical, we have a collective. It may be in very bad shape, but we have one. It needs fixing urgently, and that's the work we have to do.
please define it, because I don't, I'm not sure if you're talking about the Democratic Party, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, or you're talking about the Black Congressional Caucus.
Even the Democratic Party, the people in the party refuse to stand up for what the party is supposed to represent and stand up for. They're all waiting for Mother Dear Nancy Pelosi to tell them what to do.
I have no faith in the Democratic Party at this point,
exactly.
And I do not put my lot in with them. I want people to be elected and point out the hypocrisy. If they do nothing else but point out the hypocrisy.
Here is the thing. We have to refashion our definitions. The whole party isn't bad. A lot of it is bad, but we have to fix it.
Okay.
If we think the Democratic Party has had salvageable.
The loss of Clinton to do a self-examination and figure out whether Bernie Sanders was treated fairly or not. Have they changed the rules on superdelegates? They have not.
Look, these things are dead and gone. You cannot
They're going to come up in this primary.
Well, we deal with it when we come to it, but let's deal with it differently. And thank you so much, Marty. Let's continue this conversation if we can tomorrow. 888-874-4888 will be the number to call. And I thank you all for calling in and expressing your thoughts and sharing your concerns. We'll meet up again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
In this life that brings me here, it's my quest to live it without fear.